Hey, everybody, and welcome to another Grayscale Gorilla podcast. This is episode 10. This episode, we're going to do a little bit of Q&A from the chat room, a little bit of questions from the Facebook page, and some from Twitter, too, that people sent in. So this will just be one of those rambly Q&A ones. Hopefully, there'll be some good stuff that comes out of the end of this. So thanks for listening, as always. And we'll get to the first question, which is one I get to constantly. That is all about not motion graphics, not about getting a job, not about all this other stuff that I like talking about. It's actually about the microphone that I'm speaking into right now. And I get a lot of questions and a lot of comments about it. And I wanted to just tell you what it is. It's a Heil PR40. And it is a dynamic microphone. So there are kind of two main different types of microphones. There's condenser and there's dynamic. Dynamic mics, let's talk about why condensers are pretty good. Condenser mics are pretty good because they sound more natural, they pick up more detail, and they're powered. They're actually, there's a low-level power that goes through the cable and into the mic, and it actually activates the diaphragm or the capsule so that it picks up more detail. And those are great for a lot of situations. But the bad thing about condenser mics is that they pick up the whole room. Phantom power. Thank you, Wales. Somebody in the chat room reminded me that power is called phantom power. So the condenser mics are nice because they pick up the whole room. They're a very natural sound. But also, because you're doing podcasting, or because I'm doing podcasting, picking up the whole room is not a good idea right now. So, for example, my air conditioner is running. We got some wind hitting the windows on the outside. If I were to type onto my keyboard or bump into something, you would hear it because it's a condenser mic. But because this Heil that I am speaking into is a dynamic microphone, then it is it only picks up sounds that are nearby. So the dynamic microphone only picks up maybe a few feet away, and it really falls off after that. So the reason I use this microphone, and to get back to questions that you guys probably actually care about, the reason I use this microphone is because it sounds really good, like a condenser microphone, but it actually is a dynamic mic and sounds more and has the pickup pattern more of a dynamic microphone. So check it out. It's a little pricey, and you can get this little spider mount for it, so if you bump into the stand, it doesn't screw anything up. I also have a pop filter I'm using too to keep those puh-puh-puhs and buh-buh-buhs from hitting the mic and producing wind and all that stuff. So well, this certainly isn't this week in audio microphone podcasting, but I wanted to get that question out of the way because I get that question a lot. Why do you use that mic? What is it? And where can I get it? So there you go. Check that out. All right. Let's hop into the chat room here and see if anyone has a question that we can latch on to and I can kind of ramble on about. So anybody in the chat room can just go ahead and throw up all this stuff here. Mirko is asking about the update. Any updates for the Grayscale Gorilla free models pack? And yeah, we actually have some of those coming soon. So if you haven't checked out the if you're a Cinema 4D artist and you want some models to play around with, you can get it at Grayscale Gorilla. It's called the Free Model Pack or Free Model Kit. Now I can't even remember. But if you type in free models into the search, you'll find it. And it's a bunch of models, and we're hoping to update that really soon and have more and more and more models as people submit them. Sooner or later, we're going to have to upgrade that to 12 only, and that's mainly because a lot of people that are building these models are using 12, and there's no way to save it backwards compatible. So there's that one. Next question. Oh, this is going to be a random day. I could already feel it. Ram Chandelier. I totally screwed that up. Sorry, buddy. Is asking, do I make apps for Android? And I get this question a lot, too. I make some iPhone apps, and a lot of people wonder if I can make it and build it and launch it for Android. And there's a lot of reasons I'm not interested in Android right now. One is that the market isn't there, and I know that... And this is the first point. It's most of these points are pretty selfish points. If it was easy, if I could click a button and it would be out for Android, you know, I would probably do it. But there's a lot that goes into it. And I'll hopefully talk a little bit about it right now. So one thing is that the market, while Android, the numbers for Android are up, the people that actually pay for apps on the Android market is really low. They're just not it's not part of the culture, I guess. The big one, the one that's really tricky, is that actually making the software and developing for it and programming for it is tricky because of course people are going to disagree, because there are people that love Android, and that's fine. But I think it'll all make sense when I say my last point, but we'll get there. The second point is that it's difficult to program for because there's so many different types of screens, so many different types of phones, so many different types of operating systems, and what you essentially have to do, especially with visually based apps like a camera, and think about this: different cameras. Different resolutions on every one of those devices. So what we would kind of have to do in a way is develop different algorithms for different sized cameras, different sized images. Now, there are some APIs in there, and there are some calls that allow you to make it kind of camera agnostic and make it size to the correct size. But most reports I see and most people I talk to end up saying that you basically have to code it separately for each phone anyway. And as soon as a new phone comes out, boom, we got to go back and do it. Where iPhone and the iOS platform makes it a lot easier. So it's really, it's a two-man operation, really. It's a three-man operation. It's me, a developer, and then my fiance, who runs all the social stuff and answers email and runs all the contests and does those things. And for us to go Android, we would have to hire another team. We'd have to hire at least one or two more people. And it's just not something we're not interested in. And the last point I'll make quickly, which is to me the most important point, is I like making products that I use, that I like, that I like to use daily. And, making something for Android and me not being able to play with it all day without having an Android phone in my pocket just isn't what I'm interested in. I like making products that I like and then also having it out there for other people that like it. Same with the texture pack and the LightKit Pro and all this stuff. All of these things make my life easier, and I'm hoping that they'll make your life easier. So hopefully that answers it. I have a little bit of a write-up on the Banana Camera Company blog, which is where I sell all the iPhone apps. It's bananacameraco.com, and you can check that out there. You can go to the FAQ. All right, good question. Thank you, guys. Let me see what else we got here. I'm just kind of searching through some questions. Why the Vegas and Nick Vegas? I might as well answer this one too. I get this question a lot. So my Twitter name is Nick Vegas. A lot of my screen names and forums and stuff is Nick Vegas. And this nickname was actually given to me when I moved to Chicago. A good friend of mine that I met early on when I moved here already had too many Nicks in her phone. And I was the Nick that used to live in Vegas. I lived in Las Vegas for about a year and then moved back to Detroit and then moved to Chicago. And when I did that, she put Nick Vegas in her phone because that's how she remembered who I was. And she started calling me Nick Vegas. Hey, Nick Vegas, Nick Vegas, Nick Vegas this. Me and Nick Vegas, we're going to go hang out. We're going to, we're all hanging out. And she ended up being kind of one of those influential kind of people in the city that just kind of knows everybody, that introduced me to all my friends. And she ran the coffee shop up the road, and just always hanging out with her. So whenever I was introduced to anybody, Nick Vegas, Nick Vegas, this is Nick Vegas. So all my friends call me Nick Vegas in the city. When I was in a band, that was my name. And when it came time to find a Twitter name, Nick's taken, Nick C's taken, boom, Nick Vegas is open. Let's go for it. So there's a quick story about that one. Thanks for the question. All right, let's get back into the chat room here and see what we can find. How much should I work in college? Your buddy is asking, how much should I work in college? Oh, man. I don't know exactly what you mean by that question or where you're going or what your stance is on this. But I would say if you're tempted not to work very hard in college, I would not go to college. If you're just there to kind of half-ass it or whatever, then I would just go ahead and go because it's so expensive, right? And there's not in the creative field, there's not a lot of outcome if you don't go to school and you actually put some hours in and you stay late and ask questions. If you find that mentor, if you don't learn from your students and learn from your teachers and actually like put some effort into it, it's just wasted time. You're wasting years. You're wasting your good years. I mean, you're probably what, 20, whatever. You're probably the most good looking you'll ever be. And what, you're stuck in a school you don't want to be in. And you could be out hanging out, meeting ladies and high-fiving dudes. Go do that. You know, if you're not into it, get out. I think he's clarifying, you know, what should be your study? How should you split your time between studying and working? If you're in school and you're getting all this freelance work and you're being asked to do real work, you know what? If your schoolwork has to, I forgot what teacher told me this, but I asked my teacher exactly this question, which was, I'm finishing up school. I have a lot of projects I need to do. And I also am getting places like Digital Kitchen, you know, at the time that were calling me, asking me to do freelance work while I was still in school. And this was crazy to me. And I was really, really stressed out because I didn't want to make my classes suffer. And I certainly didn't want to say no to Digital Kitchen. So what do I do? Right. And the teacher, he looked at me, he's like, you know what, you only have a certain amount of time. And if you have to choose, right, because you at the end, you have to choose between real work and schoolwork. If you have to choose between the two, always go for the real work. And because you're going to learn more, doing real work and with real money, with real clients. And the sooner you can get into a real situation, the better. School is great for sitting there and screwing up and making mistakes and nobody knowing and learning how to even speak the language. But as soon as you have that ability to get into work mode and you think you can and you think you're doing well and you think you can learn, go do that. And in fact, my senior project kind of suffered and I feel bad about it. When I look at it too, it's kind of whack. You're not going to see it on my site, right? It's not a thing I'm proud of. But you know what? It suffered because I did nothing but freelance work for that whole 3 months. You know what I mean? Anyway, hopefully there's some help in there in making the decision. Appreciate the question. IMAJ is asking why version 12 only for the texture kit. And that's just simply because most of those textures were made in version 12 and forward. And there's no way to export textures to go backwards. There's no way to export scenes and textures in 12 and save them as 11.5 or earlier. So, figured with the texture kit, it's a good newer product to just go 12 and move forward from there. Because historically there's going to be a new, version out one of these days. We're just going to be 12 and forward for the next, for that product only. All the other products are 11 and forward. That's the first 12 and forward only one. And it looks like 12's the future. The next one's the future. So we're just going to go there. I saw some other good questions. Sorry, guys. Feel free to drop them in there. All right. Let's see what we got here. Bum, 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 bum. Oh, wow. Okay. Sorry, folks, if you're listening audio. There's some dead air here, but I'm looking at all these great questions. Deciding to pick one. Any advice Oh boy. Any advice at overcoming the technical difficulties to achieve your creative vision? Oh wow. That's a tough question. Let's see what we could do with that. Any advice for overcoming creative technical abilities to your creative vision? So if I'm understanding the question right, you have a bigger idea in your head than what you are capable of making with your current skill level. You know what? This is a big lesson to learn, I think. I think that coming up with ideas that you are capable of doing is a huge part of creative work. And I would go back to the drawing board. Let me take that back. There's two things you could do. If it's just beyond where you are and you think you can do it, go do it. Right? So if you know some things about 3D tracking and you know a few things about blowing people's heads up and you know a few things about adding 3D into your shot film and you've used a camera before and you've used Cinema 4D before and you've used these things but you've never put them all together, then do it, man. If you feel that you can that it's just beyond your reach, then that's the perfect project to do. Doing something that you might, maybe, I don't know, think you can do, but is just beyond your skill set is the perfect thing to learn the next level. And really, continuing to do that process is how you get better. Doing something that you already know how to do over and over again makes you stand still. So if you really feel like you're, boom, like just outside of the edge of being able to do it, then sit there all weekend, learn how to do it. Learn how to 3D track. Learn how to blow heads up. Learn how to incorporate 3D into your scene. And get her done. So sorry. I'm so sorry. I can't believe I just said that. But if you come up with an idea that is way beyond where you are, like if you are an illustrator and you come up with this crazy 3D Pixar movie and that's really what you want to be able to do my next weekend, well, I'm afraid there's no good way to say that they won't be done. Now, you can make steps toward it, and maybe that's your lifelong goal, is to finally make your short animated, 15-minute, fully animated, textured, lit film that's all character animation. But if all you know is how to use the pen tool, well, my friend, you have a lot to learn, right? So it all depends on how huge your idea is compared to your current skill level. And if it's, if it's 15%, 10%, even 30% further than where you are right now, do it. But if you're 1,000% away from your goal and you have no idea where you're going, then start way smaller. Pare it down. Maybe you can make 1 second of your idea. Maybe you can just learn how to model your favorite character. Maybe you can just learn how to light a sphere, right? So break it down into small chunks, learn it, and then start to tackle those big pieces, because it'll be crazy. Great question, by the way. All right. Let's see what other questions we got here. Trichrome. I have no idea what you're trying to say there, buddy. I know you're saying it a lot, but I just don't get it. I don't get that question. Maybe you could rephrase that one. Let's see here. Your buddy. How do I toot my own horn without sounding like a douche? Your buddy is asking. I think what he means is he's talking about kind of self-promotion and saying like, doing the thing that nobody likes, which is like, hey, check out my reel, right? And that never works. It doesn't work. It doesn't work in forums. It doesn't work on Facebook. It doesn't work in comments. You have to give a little to get a little, I think. I think that one of the best ways that you can promote yourself and show everybody how good you are without saying, hey everybody, I'm so awesome, is to help people, be in a community and ask questions, and answer questions and share your knowledge and all this stuff. And then when it comes time to show your reel or have a relationship, you don't always have to share and give stuff away, but have a relationship with somebody, know somebody at a at a local post house, you know, so that when it comes time to show your work, you're not like, hey, I'm your, I'm awesome. Check out my reel. What you're doing instead is saying, hey, can you critique my reel? Maybe there's some way I can make it better, right? And then you're in a great position because they're not only going to go, if you're good, they're not only going to go, hey, you know, maybe you can add a little bit of thing here, there, fix this. But also, by the way, we're hiring, or my buddy's hiring, or we'll keep you in mind, or blah, blah, blah. So, you know, self-promotion's tough. You can't just not know anybody and then throw a link up somewhere and think that people are going to click it. It's a steady stream of being part of the community, man. Being part of it. All right. So let's see here. We're going to jump back into the chat room here. And if you want to join the chat room, we usually do this on Wednesdays at 2 o'clock Central Time, Chicago time. All right. Let's see what we got here. Whales for Life is asking, do you think the ever-increasing catalog of online tutorials, both free and paid, will do away with design school? Can tutorials teach you how to, quote, design? What a good question. That's a good question right there. Let me gather my thoughts on that one. There's a lot to be said about being in a room with somebody that knows more than you. And I mean this by them actually being in the room. And maybe in the future, nobody's in a room, you know, but you can kind of dial them up and you can have a conversation with them. That's important too. But what I'm trying to say is tutorials are great when you have time, when you can pause it, when you can walk away, when you can learn at your own pace. But sometimes you need to get in a room with somebody that knows what the hell they're doing and ask them very specific questions and get very specific answers depending on where you are at your level. And there may be something that you're just missing. You know, for me, it was typefaces. So it didn't matter how many tutorials. Now, there's not a lot of tutorials on typefaces, but I'm sure there's a lot of tutorials on how to make this Photoshop thing, right? And how to make your logo in Illustrator and all this stuff. And if I were to watch all of those tutorials, I probably wouldn't come out with the answer that I got by asking a friend, hey, out of the 8 bajillion typefaces out there, how do you choose between these? Do you really, is there a place for every one of these? Is there a place for every one of these typefaces? Like, is there something I'm missing? Is this typeface always go with this type of thing? I was just totally ignorant to the whole situation. And nobody ever sat and told me, and they said, hey, you know what, Nick, you usually just get comfortable with like 5 or 10 typefaces. You like them. You have a preference of typefaces. You tend to like certain ones and dislike other ones. But you know what? Pare it down to 10 or 15 typefaces that you know and love, and work with those. And if you get a new job where you have to really find the most perfect roller coaster typeface and you don't have it in your thing, then reach out, branch into those thousands of other ones and maybe try to organize and find it. When you find it, pull it in and put it into your 15 or 20 and keep that kind of close to your pen, if you will. And the way to think about that totally changed my whole mind of, okay, I have to go find out of these 8,000 typefaces the perfect one. But instead what it did was it made me go, for this job, I think this will work. It's one of my favorites. I know how to use it well. I know what it looks good. I know how to make it look good. I know its weights. I know it mixes well with these other fonts. All those things matter once you start limiting your choice, right? So, you know, this is an example of having somebody next to you that you can tap on their shoulder and ask them, how does this make sense to you? And having that ability is why I think that tutorials won't replace teachers in a way, you know, as far as pre-recorded tutorials anyway. So I guess that sums it up. You can learn a heck of a lot from tutorials. I've learned what every button in After Effects did through tutorials. But what I didn't learn was how to use all those buttons to tell a story and how to use all those buttons to make something beautiful that moves over time into something else beautiful. I didn't learn that you probably shouldn't put full bright green and full bright orange right next to each other all the freaking time like I did. I just didn't learn that stuff. And I think those are things that could be more of a classroom. I'll say one last thing about it, which is check out Khan Academy, K-A-H-N, I think it is. Khan Academy is brilliant. Idea from this teacher that decided to just put all of his lessons up on YouTube, and you can go back and watch them. So we're talking like physics lessons, math lessons, science lessons. He's got a really, really, really good one on banking and how money is made and traded and how it's built up over time. Brilliant, brilliant stuff. You know, that might be 90% of how people learn and go to school. But the school itself part, other than all the social aspects and meeting people and learning how to work with people and all that stuff that is important, the actual learning what you're supposed to learn, I think you kind of always at least need a mentor, if not school. I mean, you need a physical human to like get in a fist fight with, because that's where the real learning happens. Thanks for the questions. That was great. Wales, nice one. Nice one, buddy. All right, let's see. I'm going to screw this one up too. Ram Chandelia is asking, which do I prefer, static or motion design? I prefer motion design. I think I'm better at it, or I have more experience with it. But static design is something I wish I could do more. I have some really, really great designer friends that just make the most beautiful sites and the most beautiful posters and just pulling, I don't know. They're just great. They could take really simple shapes and things and turn them into just beautiful looking, stuff that could go on my wall, that could go in a book, that could go on a website. And while I certainly try, you know, things like the Banana Camera Company site is something I spent a lot of time trying to tweak and play with just because I wanted to be better at still design. But I definitely am probably more comfortable doing motion design. But I'm definitely learning more and more about still. And they influence each other, too. One of those things that took me a long time to figure out was the idea of making the motion look as good as designed posters. This is something MK12 always did really well for me anyway, was they kind of animated really cool looking vintage posters in a way. And when I finally saw that in their work, I was like, I see what's going on. They're designing 20 posters and figuring out how to animate between them all in a way, you know? And that really influenced the way that I thought about design and have thought about motion. So in a way, I'm learning a lot about both all the time. I'm definitely more comfortable doing motion, but I'd love to be better at still design. I really would. All right. Let's see here. What was the name of my band back in the day? The band I was in Chicago was called Rusty Pipes. You can see our stuff at rustypipes.org. I was playing drums. I think if you search Rusty Pipes in Vimeo as well, you're going to find our Vimeo page where we have our last show. And you could probably see me do my singing debut for the last show doing... Mama Said Knock You Out, little LL Cool J. So that's if you want to go find LL Cool J, you know, me singing out, rapping LL Cool J behind the drums, you can go ahead and do that. Anyway, fun band. Thanks for the question. Do I make music videos? Daniel, I do. I do make music videos. Go to CampbellandMunson.com. CampbellAnnMunson.com, and you'll see music videos that I not only make, but I also help write the songs for and color correct and do all that fun stuff. It's probably not what you meant by "do I make music videos," but any excuse to have you guys annoy you guys with my guitar playing is a great one. All right, let's get a real question here. Sorry, folks. Munson with an O, M-O-N-S-O-N. Yeah. Just talking in the chat room here. Wales here with another good question. I have a feeling already. Is art ever perfect? Have you ever had to justify or explain a piece of your work? No, art is not ever perfect. It's not ever finished. For me, it isn't anyway. It is just something that needs to go out. As far as justifying or explaining my stuff, you know, when it's really my stuff, you don't have to justify it. You know, when it's really my work and nobody else's and nobody's paying for it, you know, I don't have to see that. People are asking where they could see more of my work. My full portfolio is at Creamy Orange, CREAMY Orange.com. And you can see that has all my motion stuff and it's got everything there. You know, as far as justifying stuff, when it's my personal work, I don't have to justify it because it's my personal work. When I'm doing work for clients and they're trying to say it shouldn't be this way and I think it should, you know, that's where having a design education and explaining why you make decisions could be helpful, where you say, hey, you know, I know you wanted it this way, but we tried it and it wasn't working and we think this works better. Chris Schmidt's taken off. See you, buddy. Sorry, more chat room jabber for the podcast. Sorry, folks. You know, with clients, it gets a little more difficult because you could state your case, but it's up to them at the end of the day. We've already talked about that, I guess. All right. Let's hop back in the chat room. See what we got here. All right. Is it worth it to change your own branding or nickname? I don't think it makes that big of a deal. I would just concentrate on your work. I wouldn't worry too much about your brand name and stuff like that. Just make better work. Spend your time making stuff you like to do. Thanks, Danny, for the question. All right. Let's see here. I'm just finding another one. The chat room jumps around so quick, I don't even know sometimes. Ram again is asking, if I see a real and fine work from my tutorials, how do I feel? I think I addressed this last week too. But mainly I feel like they're doing themselves a disservice, you know? I don't get angry. I'm not too worried about, you know, me or my stuff or them showing their work and not giving me credit or something like that. I started this site to help people get jobs and to be better at motion design. And when I see a reel full of tutorials, whether they're mine or anybody else's, I worry about their chance of doing this as a living, you know. I worry about their ability to take what they have learned and apply it to new work, because anybody can follow a tutorial, of course, but what we really want to see when we see your reel is how you make your work. I'm more anxious about their opportunity as an artist than I am at me feeling like ripped off or anything. And you know what? I'm doing tutorials based on other people's work, right? And so the tutorials aren't designed for that type of stuff. They're designed for learning. So I get anxious about it in a way that is hopefully helpful. Let's see here. Let's head back to chat room. Do I think that Chicago is a great city to live in and get work in the field? I think there's a good market here in Chicago. I know a lot of freelancers. I know a lot of people that are moving out into freelance. It looks like there's a strong market. I know a lot of studios in town. I could think of a dozen studios right now, motion studios that are working, that are doing really, really great work. Really great work. And I think it's a great city. It's probably the third biggest market, or third or fourth in the States. Chicago's a great town. Got some nice weather going on right now with a little bit of breeze, chance of thunderstorm, which is always my favorite weather. So I would check out Chicago. It's on a lake you can, you know, swim in and not feel all salty. A lake, folks, giant lakes. It's beautiful. All right, let's get a few more questions and we'll end this one up. Let's see. Do I have a multiple monitor setup? I do not. I use one single monitor, mostly for tutorial reasons. I used to use dual monitors. Is making tutorials a good way to find clients? I didn't see who asked that question, but I don't think it is. I don't think it's necessarily a good way to... Clients don't go and sit on websites like this and watch tutorials. You know, all of us nerds do. I don't think people paying for the work... know about it. I don't think people, you know, the only thing I'll say that could work is if people know you because you do tutorials and help them out, they may be willing to recommend you. So maybe there's something there. But you know, I think sharing in general, you know, let me take that whole thing back. I think there is a big value in helping other people in the community, however you choose to do that. If you want to make a tutorial, if you want to give away your scene files or do whatever, like, you know, and I say go for it. More sharing, more better. I totally screwed that question up. Totally. I answered myself and totally got it wrong. All right. One more question here. Find one more here in the chat room. And I already talked about that one. What are the markets? Oh boy. Wacom tablet. Now I have to talk about Wacom tablet. I don't think I have talked about the Wacom tablet. Your buddy is asking about my Wacom tablet. So I've given this in other videos, but I'll give you the short story on the Wacom that I use and why I use it and how I use it. I use the small Intuos 4 Wacom tablet, and I started using it because I started getting wrist problems. I started getting not wrist, but like forearm problems when I was using a mouse all the time. And, you know, I was 24, 5, 6. Didn't want to get a carpal tunnel. Didn't want to screw my arm up and like not have a career ahead of me, right? Because it's obvious, you know, my career is probably going to be evolved around a computer, right? So a lot of artists at Digital Kitchen where I was working had these tablets and they swore by them. And they said it's really natural. Especially Cam, who was working there, swore by it. And he gave me some really good advice. The first advice he gave me was try it out and force yourself to use it for a couple weeks. And the other advice he gave me was get the small one. Get the small one because you could put it in front of your keyboard. We kind of had these weird desks at DK, and you couldn't push your monitor back any further, and there was a little cove for your keyboard. And there was just enough room in front of your keyboard for a small Wacom tablet. So he said, get the small one. They probably already have one downstairs in the tech room. I called up the tech guy. He brought it up, started playing with it, and hated it. Hated using it, and got really pissed off, but I remembered what Cam said, which was keep using it, keep playing with it, and eventually you'll get used to it, and then you'll just use it for everything. So I did that, and there you go. After a week or so, I was more comfortable with it. I used it for almost everything, everything except for like browsing web pages and Call of Duty. Call of Duty with a Wacom pen just does not work. We always played our death match, our capture the flag there. What do they call that one? That one that's so good. Anyway, I had to switch to Miles for that one. But for everything else, pen. Holy crap. 3D pen, After Effects pen, Photoshop pen. Got really, really used to it. And in fact, I'm so used to it now that I carry it around when I travel. It's in my laptop bag, goes through security. People look at it funny. They don't know what it is. And I just need it. I need it when I do work. Anything but checking my email, I just need a Wacom tablet. And if you're having any sort of wrist problems, I would, A, first of all, go get it looked at. B, go try out a Wacom. Now, you don't even have to start with the expensive one. Just get a normal one, try it out, and then upgrade. And then, you know, once you go Wacom, you don't go back or something like that. I don't know. Anyway, great questions today. Thank you guys so much for stopping in again for another Grayscale Gorilla podcast. Hopefully this one made some sense, and the Q&A format works really well. I'm going to actually try to make this a little bit more formal as far as asking questions, making them a little bit more structured. So I'm not filling in the gaps with all the time while I'm searching for stuff through the chat room, you know, which can get spammy and people ask the same question over that I don't know how to answer and stuff like that. So we're going to maybe try to find a better solution. Who knows? Always evolving. Anyway, what a cheesy way to end that podcast. Thanks again for listening, and I'll see you in another one real soon. Thanks, everybody. Bye.